Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I like Double Turns, Shawn Michaels' music videos, and CM Punk's gangster suit. And if that ginger lady that cried at WrestleMania 7 thought the Savage Elizabeth reunion was upsetting, I dread to think about the impact that Hogan and Sid had on her the next year.
I'm Carl Jones, and I realised that myself and WrestleMania couldn't be more different. Whilst they're big time, I couldn't be more small time. Whilst their idea of success is going Hollywood, my idea of success is going to the bathroom. Whilst WrestleMania is what the world comes to, I can't even get Jehovah's Witnesses to knock on my door.
I'm G. John Chase, and I'm starting to get the distinct impression that 2K is desperately trying to piss me off. I've been waiting for months now for the special DLC content which has Rick Rude and Macho King Randy Savage. They're now giving me NXT Arrival. I don't want the fucking Ascension. I want Rude and Savage.
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke. I'm going to say right now that Sasha Banks is my girl. Think about it, folks. She's like wrestling's Jessica Alba, except without the horrendous damage from childbirth.
This is the panel for the 32nd Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear part two of our Ranking the WrestleMania series next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 32nd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Kieran O'Rourke.
Easy now.
G. John Chase.
I made a kick ass and chew bubblegum.
And Carl Jones.
I'd take names but I can't write.
Well, on that positive note, we are here for part two of three in our series Ranking the WrestleManias. Part one last week looked at the bottom 10 installments of the April Classic, as the WWE likes to say. For those of you who didn't listen to last week's show, you can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Squared Circle Gazette Radio and going back and listening to the bottom 10. This obviously came about from a series of articles I've written for steelchair.co.uk where I've been ranking the WrestleManias in blocks of 10. And the criteria for search was match quality, hype quality, the implications going in and coming out, the critical and artistic success of the show, and personal nostalgia, which is always going to play a part. For this week, I'm actually very, very interested because this middle 10 area is what I would expect a little bit less, perhaps, discerning than the other WrestleManias in the bottom and the top, but there's actually been such a wide variance of opinion on these WrestleManias that fall in the middle category that I'm really interested to get to this batch. So following up from last week's podcast, at number 20, let's kick it off, WrestleMania 18 from 2002, in the article, still in that batch where I consider this a D-grade WrestleMania, very, very deserving of this spot. To me, this is one of the most interesting parallels of any WrestleMania to WrestleMania, from this Skydome show to the previous Skydome show at WrestleMania 6, which was a one-match show based around Hulk Hogan and absolutely fuck all else on the undercard that really had anything to sink your teeth into. And that's the story of this show for me, and it's why it's ranked so low. Rock and Hogan, I can't really take that much away from it in the sense of it is very, very, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. The changes in the industry that have happened since will never allow for a match like this to happen again and a crowd reaction like this to happen again, I think. But there's just so much about this show that I despise, and if it wasn't for that one match being completely surreal to the point where it's very, very memorable, and you can't really take that away from WrestleMania 18. This period of time for the WWF is ass rotten. When you look at the rest of the card again, much like WrestleMania 6, you've got all these guys who are so talented that are just wasting away in positions of non-importance, like Kurt Angle wrestling Kane, like Rob Van Dam, who was over like crazy at the end of 2001, stuck in the opener and firmly established in the mid-card. You got Booker T and Edge kind of treading water in a mid-card match, Steve Austin messing around with Scott Hall. We haven't even mentioned the dead main event, by the way, Triple H Chris Jericho, which is obviously one of the big strikes against this show. Hogan Rock, if that's the big strength on this show, and the setting obviously helps as well, I was baffled by this period of time. Hogan being cheered and pissing away the NWO angle. I remember, for as many people who probably watched that show and were like, well, you know, kind of living the moment when Hogan kicked out of the Rock Bottom and starts hulking up, when that happens, I just remember looking at it and just thinking, this whole NWO angle, that they've only just started it, they've done nothing, and they're pissing away already. And just the direction of the company following this, where the belt goes to Hogan based off this reaction, which goes to Taker, it was just a horrible period of time, and this WrestleMania is exemplary of a lot of problems that took place in 2002, so I cannot consider this anything other than a D-grade WrestleMania. Everything around it, the surrounding circumstances, just soured me to such a degree.
To be honest, yeah, I can understand why you got this as number 20. I mean, myself, I only got it one place higher, really, so I'm not going to argue too much about, you know, just one place or not.
Yeah, and I'll say that if anybody puts this in their bottom 10, I wouldn't be too appalled.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either. And you're absolutely right in terms of the comparison of both of those shows, 6 and 18. really good rosters at the time, and it's just this weird kind of mismatch that they've done with everybody. The big one, the big guilty one, is Austin. Austin and Hall wrestling each other was not a good idea. Austin being in the middle of the show is just inexcusable. Completely, it just doesn't feel right. I didn't have it quite placed as low as you, because there were a couple other things on the show that I thought were pretty decent that raised it just enough that it's not in my bottom 10. I agree with you in terms of Rob Van Dam. When I was reading the article and you were talking about how this match pretty much just established these two guys as mid-carders for a considerably long time. For Rob Van Dam, it was till 2006, and Regal, it was, well, forever. Saying that, though, it was a pretty decent match. I didn't think their two styles would mesh well, but they actually did. They actually put on an entertaining match. I might go as far to say I thought their styles meshed better than Regal and Jericho's. Yeah, and the Ric Flair Undertaker, which I enjoyed for one obvious reason.
Double A's running.
Yeah, Double A's running, which was absolutely fucking fantastic. I remember watching it at the time, and when Double A runs in and hits a picture perfect spine buster, we were just both off all our chairs, just jumping up and down, screaming. I was like, how much of a mark out moment that was for me and my friends was that. Back in those days, kids, we didn't have Sky where you can just pause and rewind live TV. This was in a situation where we said, okay, as soon as the show's finished, we're winding the tape back and we're watching our fucking moment again, because that was fantastic. It was Rock, Hogan, that match alone and just the atmosphere does rise it just above the bottom 10, just because of how special it is. The guilty issue here is the main event and just the complete... screwed the pooch with it, really. I don't know whose bright... Well, I could probably guess, actually. I don't know whose bright idea it was for this match to follow Hogan.
It came down to the fact that Jericho wasn't over as a heel champion because of the way they booked him.
Yeah, it's... I think there was more issues than that than just simply Jericho wasn't over as a heel. I think obviously, Stephanie McMahon's involvement here pretty much almost gazumping Jericho completely. It was more about Triple H and Stephanie.
Oh, I had something about booking of it.
Okay. When we finished watching The Rock... Hogan, me and my friends were standing. We were like, yeah, that was fantastic. We were all standing because we were waiting to go, because we were waiting for the little logo in the corner to appear to say the show was ended.
Oh, we got the world title match.
And it kept going and going. It was like, oh, fuck.
Across the table, I'm curious here. Number 20, WrestleMania 18. Strong thoughts or feelings either way on this one?
The Rock-Hogan matches make for an incredible spectacle, and I can appreciate people being prisoners of the moment, but I watched that match back now. And it is all just smoke and mirrors. It is not that good a match.
Well, it's Hogan, so yeah.
It's Hogan, you know, you take it as it is. And much to your point earlier, as a sort of a long-term vision for the company, it pisses away the NWO. We know Rock's going. Austin Hall, as much as I love Steve Austin, it's a poor decision to put them together to have Scott Hall do the job in under 10 minutes. Yeah. And Nash to look like a bit of a no-mark as well while we're at it. The build in general to this mania I didn't like.
It's awful, isn't it?
You know, you referenced the undercard there, and I don't want to go over too much old ground, but I'll just say DDP Christian, you've got the guy coming off a losing streak gimmick to challenge for a title that isn't worth a bucket of warm piss anyway, against the self-help motivator who completely lost his luster when he was stalking Undertaker's wife.
Found his smile, though.
Oh, he found his smile, and not long afterwards he'd find the exit door as well. You've got the Booker T Edge match, which is the feud over a Japanese shampoo commercial, and the build to that main event. You know, we referenced there Stephanie gazumps Jericho. You've got the whole divorce settlement, and Stephanie comes out in hives. Lucy the dog gets run over. You know, I'm sure, you know,
the car gets cut in half.
Yeah, the car gets cut in half. You know, and even then, because that's not enough, we have Drowning Pool, ladies and gentlemen. Drowning Pool are there to give a musical performance to tell us the story of the main event. Drowning Pool were there, and the crowd were drowning in apathy. I don't care about this mania looking back. No one else in the world cares about this mania looking back. You referenced earlier how you couldn't argue if anyone had it in their bottom 10. I agree wholeheartedly. And God knows if Rock and Hogan were in there for that spectacle, as it were, it would be comfortably in any bottom 10 that I would put together.
Yeah, if I did lists, this would probably be my bottom 10. Although, obviously, it's all relative. But just so many negatives from the show for me. And if my, I don't know, so I'm not going to repeat anything everyone's already said, but the throwing together nature of the NWA matches, cause it wasn't originally going to be Hogan, I'm sorry, Austin Hall, was it?
No, they wanted to do Austin Hogan.
Yeah, it's a deep roster, but it's just stuff thrown together, and as you said, this is the one instance of Triple H in a main event, which I can at least understand where they're coming from. He had the big return, so they went all out with it.
The Rumble buy rate was the best Rumble buy rate in history.
So they went. I mean, and this is after he's been the badass heel and he's just turned face. So I've got no problem with them on this occasion with him being in the main event. Yeah, Jericho was weak and the feud was weak. And in front of that crowd, never going to follow Hogan because that crowd was there for Hogan. The show itself, it's got that WrestleMania moment, Hogan Rock. TM, I'm glad I'm surprised no one else said that before.
What's that?
A WrestleMania moment.
Oh yeah,
that's
yeah.
all it is. It's a moment, much in a, yeah, similar to Six. I just, the negativity going out of this, yeah, I'm not a fan.
That to me, that what you just said there, the whole the coming out of it is one of the bigger kick in the balls of this show, because this was the first time, ironically enough, since Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 9, where the company decided that the future was the past, where they decided, okay, the way for, you know, for the first time in a long, long time, it wasn't about the here and now. The WWF was always very keen to put the past in the rearview mirror where it belonged, and this is the first time where they thought, you know what, let's just go back to the past. It just felt like WCW in 99 after this, where all these guys that 3 years earlier were huge stars, and now we're going to ride the gravy train because we don't have Austin and Rock. Austin, who loved the booking of the show so much, he pissed off for 2 weeks afterwards. And Rock's obviously off to Hollywood. So you got Triple H, who's very cold, coming out of WrestleMania. The Undertaker, who got pushed as a top guy. Hogan, who's a relic, and people were only cheering because of the nostalgia. It didn't work.
It's very much, you get the sense it's at this point, it's a company struggling for a direction.
Well, they were panicked because of the invasion bombed.
Yeah, well, that's it. Many people like to say that the boom ended with the previous year's WrestleMania. The Austin heel turn caused a downturn in business. They had the chance to salvage it in the short term with the invasion angle, which again, they destroyed in a matter of 4 months. And they just, it's a bit like a rudderless ship. There's a sort of a, not a panic, but there's very much a malaise about the company, isn't there? They're struggling for a direction. They think, oh God, what do we do? So they just go to these short term fixes.
Yeah, absolutely. I get into some of the feedback here because you have chimed in as always. Big Vic from TPWW Forum says, I for one think the Stone Cold Scott Hall match was very good. I still love the stunner Hall took in that match. I love that he decided to jump 15 feet in the air afterwards. RVD versus Regal was a good opener and got us pumped for the show. DDP Christian was awesome as well. 90% of the people on the advertised card were former or future world champions. This mania was better than much more of the manias going forward, which is something that I personally disagree with. Glass Smash from the UK Fan Forum, it says we had three great WrestleManias in a row with 17, 18 and 19. They were just fucking awesome in my opinion, although Triple H vs Jericho was an awful main event. It actually still bugs me why they never put the women's title on Trish at Mania 18 in Canada, but yet they put it on her the next night on Raw. Surely it would have been a bigger deal to do it on the grand stage for a better pop. It just made no sense. The show off in the UK fan forum kind of disagrees here, saying the intro for WrestleMania 18 with Saliva playing Superstar to a highlight package was the second best thing on the show. And Dr. Peter Venkman from the UK fan forum says, 18 has Rock Hogan and Stacy Keebler's ass, top 5 material for me. So on that note, we will move along swiftly.
You Karen. You're not moving anyway. What happened specifically with her ass?
She pulls her skirt up and you get to see her ass. Jeff Hardy smacks her on the ass.
Oh.
Yeah, because she was the dummy.
Download that one.
Moving along now to number 19 on the list, the final of what I consider the D-grade WrestleManias, WrestleMania 13 from 1997. This is one that's going to get a little bit of a controversy, because in terms of pros and cons on this show, the cons far outweigh the pros. The build to this show was awful. Shawn Michaels losing his smile didn't help. Pretty much the entire card had to be reworked. The main event of this show is one of the more piss-poor main events in WrestleMania history. Thank you very much, Sid Vicious, for your two contributions to the WrestleMania main event. The aura of this show, it feels like just another pay-per-view. Coming 2 months after being in the Alamo Dome for the Royal Rumble, which did feel like a big spectacle, as papered as that show was, it just looked like any other pay-per-view. The undercard looks like an in-your-house, for the most part. However, this does have what I consider to be the best match in WrestleMania history, and possibly the best match in company history, with one of the most perfect all-around performances from everybody involved. Steve Austin, Bret Hart, Ken Shamrock, Vince, JR and Lawler on commentary were absolutely superb. This is the notable turning point for the WWF, which was struggling for a long time. They found their foot a little bit with this match and with the direction coming out of this show, which would eventually change the tide in the Monday Night War. So in terms of implications, yeah, it wasn't an immediate switch by any means, but this is a big deal. But the reason that this isn't in the bottom 10 for me is because so many matches that we're going to talk about today in this kind of middle period, and even in the top 10, have got so much going for it built in. The atmospherics of WrestleMania, the fact that now we're in a situation where everyone knows WrestleMania is the only thing that matters. The built-in nature of WrestleMania. It's very easy to have a classic at WrestleMania now because it's the way the company's built. Back then, with so little going for it, with such little momentum that the company had, with no real atmospherics at all other than a red-hot Chicago crowd for that one match at least, the fact that this match is as good as it is makes it even more incredible to me because it doesn't have any of those built-in accoutrements, if you will. I will say as well, I know we've chuckled about it in the past, but I do love the Chicago Street Fight on this show as well with the Nation of Domination against Ahmed and the LOD, just because at the time we didn't get those kind of plunder matches. It became commonplace in 98, 99, 2000, but back then you didn't get street fights very often in the WWF, and it was quite novel, so I very much enjoyed it at the time. So, Carl, I don't know if you want to chime in here, because I know that your sentiments about Austin and Bret pretty much are echoed.
You mentioned that you might call it the best match in company history. I would definitely call it the best match in company history, and it's at such a pivotal time for the company. It's getting pillared by WCW. Uncensored of that year in March actually outdraws WrestleMania 13, so it gives you an idea of the dire straits the company's in.
Well, I forgot to mention there as well, by the way, this is the worst drawing WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time as well, so that's kind of a strike against it.
So, but boy, did it ever desperately need the performances that Bret and Austin delivered. Going forward, it's pivotal to the company, because it's hard to say that this match makes Austin a bona fide superstar, but it cements him in sort of the top echelons of the companies at the forefront of everyone's mind. You don't need to say much about the main event, much like Sid's underwear at the end of it, it's the shits. I agree with you on the street fight, and it's no classic brawl, but it's a nice bit of plunder. The rest of the card is, you know, average to poor, and I think in some respects I'm being kind there.
Well, that Rocky Maivia's tap dance.
Rocky Maivia's tap dance notwithstanding, which is a bit of comedy gold. no one cares about the Sultan. But I would put it above some manias that you're going to reference later.
Okay, well, we'll come
solely,
to that.
Solely off the strength of that one match, which is a bona fide classic for the ages.
I will say, for the D-grade matches, the pattern for the most part was that they were shows that I didn't like overall, but there was one great match. This is such a great match, I put it at the top of the D's. I'm curious to see what you two guys think here about this being at spot number 19.
This I'd put in my bottom 10. To be honest, I had it, I think if I told you on the last podcast, I had it at number 21. I'm not going to go into the Austin Bret too much. We all know how great it is, okay? It's not personally my favourite WrestleMania match of all time, but it is number 2, okay? But I'm not going to argue that point too much, because I understand the absolute merits of that match. And I don't think it had actually that much build at the time. I mean, ignoring the initial feud they had at Survivor Series 96, I think it was a very kind of last minute decision, wasn't it?
Well, it was never meant to be the plan originally. The plan originally, from a long term perspective, was always Bret and Shawn in the rematch, yeah. But the achy breaky kid hurt his knee and lost his smile, and there you have it.
But man, you have to go through a lot of shit to get to it. I mean, we're looking at, I think it's roughly about 7 matches on this card, which also is just kind of like, I know there's a few tag matches in there and stuff, but that's just like a state of play of what condition WWE was in early 97 in terms of talent. They're really kind of scraping the barrel, and there's only like a few handfuls here and there. So you know, there's too many factors of how bad this show is. You know, you said it's the lowest drawing WrestleMania of all time, which surely that should surely put it in the bottom 10. Personally myself, if you guys like the Nation of Domination street fight, fair play to you. I've watched it twice, didn't particularly find it entertaining.
No,
either
call
time.
It a classic. Don't get me wrong.
I know. I'm not saying you get the kind of classic, but if this is literally one match and one match only for this card, and no matter how good it is, and it is good, it's amazing, it's one of the best ever, one match is not enough for me to take it out of the bottom 10.
How can I talk about Bret Hart and Steve Austin after the hyperbole of you three? It wasn't a wrestling match, it was performance art. It was drama, it was storytelling at its finest, it was character development, it was beautiful. And for that alone, I think if I did a list, this is probably the reason I don't. I'd slap this slap bang number 15.
Right dead middle?
Yeah, I would. The rest of it, just on principle alone, for what that means, the pivot, it's the greatest match in Mania history. I completely agree with you. A completely forgettable rest of the card. there is no rest of the card. Who gives a shit? Just on Steve Austin, Bret Hart, what happened afterwards, what it meant going forwards. Yeah, I'd put this slap bang in the middle, and I'd use this as my marker for other things, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. We'll track that as we go along.
I mean, I've just made that up on the spot, so...
Yeah. So it might hold you to it.
Bollocks.
I mean, it might be bollocks.
I'm writing it down.
But yeah. All right, moving to the feedback for this one. The Chief from Pro Wrestling Only says, 13 is a tough one because it has what many people would consider the favourite match in WWE of all time, but good God, the rest of the card. Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum says much the same thing. WrestleMania 13 is so odd. It's awful, but it features probably the best match they've ever presented and was the WrestleMania in the middle of the best year of TV they ever did. It's a massive anomaly. Moving on to these shows that I considered a grade C or better now. At number 18, we got WrestleMania 12 from 1996. Another show that a lot of people were kind of questioning whether this should be where I've put it, but I'm eager to see what people think. I've spoken in the past about how I feel that the people who don't like Bret and Shawn bury it too much, but at the same time, I think the company puts it over too much. I don't think this is a great show by any stretch. That's why it's here. It's number 18, for Christ's sake. By no means am I trying to claim this is a good show. But I do. Bret and Shawn's not a bad match. And Diesel and Taker is the best match that Taker had had in fucking years at this point. Not that it's a classic again, but it outperformed expectations in my opinion. The Return of the Ultimate Warrior was what it was. It was a big deal on the show. It's funny to see Triple H get buried in such fashion. Mm. But people actually went. I mean, let's be honest. The Ultimate Warrior was probably the second biggest thing on this show going in. And it delivered what you wanted. He came back as a big deal. Didn't last in the long term. To me, this is one of those very average WrestleManias. Yes, the OJ Simpson car chase is fucking terrible. It's a very bad period in the history of the company, much like Mania 13. The opening six-man is perfectly serviceable. Savio and Austin, it's there. It's average. It is what it is. The Hollywood backlot brawl, if you enjoy that kind of a thing, I think you can kind of take enjoyment out of it. This is a period where Goldust was red hot and Roddy Piper in a street fight setting, again, taking away the OJ car chase. I thought that this was quite fun. The reason that people don't like it is because they don't like the Iron Man that much. I think that's pretty much the gist of it. But at the same time, I can't call it a bad match. I think it's disappointing, certainly, but not bad. And to me, as a general show, overall, it's above the ones we've talked about so far, but it's at the lower end of everything else. This grade C section where it is kind of that middle ground for me of whether this bit more good but doesn't hit the heights or a bit more bad that doesn't hit the lows.
I am one of those people who's not a fan of this main event, and you know, everyone knows how much I love Shawn Michaels. I think that's the thing though, it's just at the time and still I was just massively, massively disappointed. Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Just think about that. Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. They should have
in the main event of WrestleMania.
Main event of WrestleMania. I mean, and this match for me is just in many ways synonymous with their interactions over the years. Disappointing, such a waste. What should have been the greatest in-ring feud of all time?
Yeah. When do you get two guys of that quality in the same period in the WWE?
Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. I mean, it should be up there with Kobashi and Misawa and any legendary feud you want to throw out there. And it's not because of those two guys, quite frankly. And I put to this day, I mean, I don't know this for a fact, obviously, but the booking of the match, which was a major, major drawback from it, with going the 0-0 for an hour, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Was that an ego thing? I don't know. Doesn't neither guy want to lose the first four because that's losing a real match kind of thing?
Yeah, and we talked about this on the Monday Night War in 1996 podcast a few episodes ago, where the original plan was for them to go 2-2 and then it went down to 1-1 and then they eventually settled on 0-0, I'm guessing, for what you just said. Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, I think both guys, I said this match is just synonymous with these two guys over the just a massive disappointment for me. And in judging a one match show, when you're massively disappointed with a one match, you're going to rank it low, and I, you know, for instance, compared to the 13, was it we just talked about?
Yeah,
absolutely. No way would I put it ahead of 13.
Really?
You're talking, you're comparing two one match shows, Bret Hart versus Steve Austin or the Iron Man. No comparison for me. No. And maybe I'm being harsh, and maybe it's a really well worked, snug match, and
I can't disagree with Bret more when he talks about how this is one of the best matches in the history of the business. That really raises my ire. It's like, you guys have both had better matches with other people at WrestleMania, so let's not get carried away, Bret. What about the rest of the card, though? I mean, I don't disagree with your logic in the sense of, you know, 12 doesn't necessarily belong above 13 in terms of the height, because obviously the height for 13 is so much higher. But again, the rest of the show, there's a lot of dross on 13. 12, everything's got a purpose. Everything's focused.
Is there anything on 12 better than Street Fighter yet on the undercard?
The Piper Goldust and the Diesel Taker, I think, are both probably that same level.
I think if you're splitting hairs that finely, I think I'd still go. Yeah, no doubt for me anyway.
That's actually Kieran's actually made quite a fair point there, because for me, in terms of how I rated this, I had number 12 as at number 20. Whilst, you know, when you have something as strong as Bret Austin, should be over something that's just okay at best. I mean, you know, you only have 6 matches on this card due to the fact that you're having, an hour-long main event. The Roddy Piper Goldust was fun and stuff, you know, it had some kind of humour to it. Undertaker Diesel's a fair point, you know, that was one of the better matches Undertaker had at that point. Anything's going to be better than Gonzalez. It's a show all about one match. And Kieran's absolutely hit the nail on the head here, and it's actually making me want to, like, switch them around.
Okay, but by your own volition, though. I'm going to let you finish my update. I'm not trying to cut you off here completely. I'm just saying, all the things you just mentioned about 13, let's not forget, again, lowest drawing, fucking piss-poor main event. Yeah. Dross all throughout the show. The only redeeming quality of that WrestleMania is the one match.
Yeah, talking all that shit, though, in Anaheim, they were walking out as Shawn was celebrating.
So
how great was that main event?
When you're looking at two shows that were essentially booked around one match, you essentially have to judge those shows by that one match, and when you look at it, 13 is better than 12 from the standpoint of you actually get something at the end. I remember, you know, hearing a lot about this Iron Man match and how people at the time kept saying that this is one of the greatest matches ever made. I watched it in 2000 as it was on the build towards Judgment Day, when they were going to do Rock, Triple H in the Iron Man, so they kept talking about this one. So I thought I'd check it out, and I don't know if you guys have ever done this, where you've watched a match back that you didn't see at the time, but it's overly hyped, so when you actually watch it, you try and like it more than you actually are as you're watching it. And I find myself doing that with this match, where I'm thinking this is great, and actually it's not. The big issue with me, and you've already talked about it, was the 0-0. The 0-0 was fucking boring.
It could have been great,
and it was just so boring.
Okay, well, there's a point in your favour, Kieran. I'll give you that. Carl, I want to know what you think.
I understand this notion of rating them both manias on the one match, but I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that, in the sense that 13 was never booked to be a one-match show, but people just looked to that one match because everything else is so poor, whereas 12 was booked solely around the one match.
Diesel Taker got a good bit of build.
Diesel Taker
to the point of sacrificing Brett on 2 straight pay-per-views.
Well, that seemed to be the sort of the MO for Brett's run during that period with the belt, didn't it, when you think about it. Mania 12, in many respects, a little bit like Mania 11, but not as bad, and a little bit like Mania 13 in the sense of, you know, it's a very generic looking arena type thing. The crowd's not particularly hot throughout. They pop large for the Warrior. As much as I have criticised old Jim Helwig in the past, and far be it for me to ever speak ill of the dead.
You're dropping his real names, don't you, Carl?
It's a shoot, baby. It's a shoot. But he's important to the buy rate of that, I think.
Oh, yeah.
His importance can't be understated. And it's wonderful for many of us who would suffer in later years just to go back to that one moment and just remember that no one is ever going to no-sell the pedigree like that ever again. you've talked about the Iron Man match there. We all hope for so much more. It could have been constructed better. The company certainly do overstate how good a match it was, and Brett's guilty of that. To Kieran's point about people walking out when Shawn was celebrating, I think people were actually walking out before the match finished. I'm not sure if someone...
Meltzer was there live, and he said that's the case.
You know, and I don't quite get my jollies from seeing HBK come down a zipline like Vince McMahon does, I'll be honest about that. But it's just one of those matches, not one of those matches, but one of those shows, a bit like WrestleMania 4 to me, where it just felt really long. There were no highs, there were no lows, it just sort of petered along. I'd already put 13 above 12 off the basis of the Austin Brett match being much stronger than anything on this card, but
and we're probably not going to get much contention here from Air Raid from the UK fan forum, who I should give credit to, because he gave a fantastic amount of feedback to every single one of the the nominations in the middle 10 here. We're going to get to as many as we can. He mentions here for WrestleMania 12, this should have been in the bottom 10 because there was nothing on it to enjoy or worth celebrating. The Iron Man match may be the most contentious match in company history, and for me it's the worst waste of pay-per-view time in WWF history. Even as a kid and as a massive Bret Hart fan, I knew from the second HBK's comeback for the Rumble was confirmed that he'd be taking the belt at WrestleMania. So sitting there, waiting 60 minutes for it to happen was an utter chore. The booking of Shawn not to beat the champion inside the predetermined time limit is questionable in respect to going all the way with Shawn. And while I appreciate it was meant to add spice to the potential rematch, surely you took my belt is enough reason for the two to fight again, without the convoluted ending. Either way, watching the match in highlight form really underlines that you're potentially watching the highlights of one of the best 25 to 30 minute matches you'll ever see, stretched out to 60 minutes with interminable chin locks and short arm scissors. There's nothing to redeem it underneath. Everything is either boring, Taker, Diesel, Austin Vega, or silly, like Piper Goldust, with only the opener giving it a bit of fun, and even that feels a bit of a waste, as Yoko versus Vader should have been one-on-one for the biggest show of the year. Other than the nostalgia of Warrior coming back, the only thing I like about WrestleMania 12 is Sonny's tits, and they don't count because they are on the free-for-all. however, contrasting that opinion is Carl Yaxley, who emailed in saying 12 gets a lot of heat and I don't particularly understand why. Bret and Shawn isn't the classic the company pimped it to be, but by no means will I call the match anything less than very good. So I guess there's a bit of personal enjoyment there for a few people.
Yeah, it's that weird thing which is going to be with every one of these, where it's just what personal enjoyment you get from it. There's going to be people out there that love the Iron Man match, and so we'll probably have it higher than 13 or even higher up the list.
I get the general feeling around the table. I probably think of all of us, I'm the one that with the highest opinion of the Iron Man match. Not that I think it's an all-time classic, but I probably do, so therefore it probably does bump it up to me personally. So after Kieran's fantastic point that has made me question my entire list, I will move on.
I thought we could say life then.
We will move along over to number 17 on the list, WrestleMania 25 from 2009. This is not so much of a one-match show, but it's obviously most memorable for Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. Great build to this too. Very forgotten that the build up for this match was actually really, really good, with the references to the past, the angles where Shawn Michaels would constantly get one up on The Undertaker. A lot of fun. Obviously this show also features Ricky Steamboat being involved, and the whole Chris Jericho build up was really, really good to that match as well. Money in the Bank was enjoyable on this show. The Hardys match was pretty fun for what it was. Not a classic by any means, not trying to say it was. Decent match, pretty good. The big negatives and the reason why it's in the bottom half for me, with the exception of the Shawn Michaels Undertaker build, the build up to this WrestleMania was atrocious. I absolutely hated the build to this WrestleMania. After they kind of got a little bit, you know, they once again managed to get Randy Orton a little bit hot, and they feed him to Shane McMahon and his hamster cheeks to throw terrible jabs that miss wildly. The house invasion with Triple H, all that stuff that took what was originally a very hot angle with Orton punting Vince and just completely, you know, dragged it down, made it ice cold. John Cena is in this in a complete throwaway three-way with Edge and Big Show, which was all out of Vicky Guerrero more than anything else. Two title matches that both underdelivered, and once again, much like WrestleMania 18, Triple H is unable to follow in a match earlier in the show as the top babyface wrestling for the World Championship. The Hardys build up as well. You know, Matt Hardy burns down Jeff's house and kills his dog. You know, like, this is awful. That this, you know, the security camera, Vicky slapping the Big Show's ass, all this stuff. It's all very funny to Vince. But it was just, and the title match itself was so underwhelming, so underperformed. Like I said, the Taker Shawn match is one of the best matches in the last 10 years in WrestleMania history, in my opinion. I know a lot of people think it's a self-conscious epic, a term that we've discussed before, but I think it's a very, very good match, and I don't think that argument holds too much water when the crowd eats it up like that. So I'm keen to know what everyone else thinks here. Again, C-grade WrestleMania. A lot of good sprinkled throughout the show, in my opinion, with one really, really exceptional match. The build is what holds it back, in my opinion, and there is also a little bit of shit sprinkled throughout, such as Kid Rock's concert and Santino Marella.
The Kid Rock concert, we talk about things that are just interminable. You know, this is one of them. A man who hadn't been relevant for a good 7 or 8 years. I echo your thoughts completely on the build. You know, the Triple H breaking and entering skit, which just dragged on forever. That I've never been able to enjoy the Hardy versus Hardy match because I can't get past the horrible build that you referenced with the running the vehicle off the road as well, and the pyro accident before the house is burned
down.
The
pyro accident was great. That looked awesome. The thing was that this whole angle was designed, we should mention, that for Christian to come back, and the original plan was Edge and Christian versus the Hardys at WrestleMania in a big return, you know, a big return to an old thing. Too many people knew that it was supposed to be Christian, so they did the surprise swerve with Matt Hardy against Jeff Hardy, and that's where all of this comes in.
Yeah, the old swerve, just for the sake of doing a swerve. Those negatives aside, this is a Mania where I have an inherent bias. I'll admit that straight away, because you get Austin inducted into the Hall of Fame, and I absolutely love Steve Austin. The Money in the Bank ladder match, when you consider I had Kane and Mark Henry in, could have been a disaster, and they managed to work that well enough to make it enjoyable. The Undertaker Michaels match, I prefer, I don't know if it's just me, I prefer this to the second match. I think it's the better of the two.
I prefer it to the second match.
I think the build for both is good, but I prefer this as a standalone match. The triple threat, which is just seen as almost an afterthought in it all, really. Now, I know he wins the match then, but he is an afterthought in the build up. Ricky Steamboat.
Oh, yes.
I absolutely adore Ricky Steamboat. And just that, to me, you mentioned about sort of, Kieran mentioned what you'd call a WrestleMania moment. For me, that was it. Not seeing Steamboat wrestle since 94, and to pull off some of the, you know, the deep arm drags and the crossbody, everything. It's all just fantastic. It brings a smile to my face now just talking about it. And what makes it look even better is when you compare it to the performance of Piper and Snooker in the match.
Oh,
you know, Roddy Piper had been awful since, well, probably since 94 in his feud with Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
Jimmy Snooker's offense was less convincing than him being a savage when he's questioned by police. For that reason, I'd probably rank it a little bit higher than yourself.
Whereabouts do you have this out of curiosity?
It would be hard for me to say, because as I told you off air, I forgot my list.
I am on the opposite side of this, sorry, Carl. I actually dropped this a little lower. With the exception of a couple of other matches, which I found certain degrees of entertainment from, there's really not much to the show. I guess I'm going to be the one that sticks out like a sore thumb here, and I actually didn't rate the Money in the Bank match that well.
I think it's great, but it's not bad.
Well, okay, it's not bad.
Let's just backtrack slightly and remember what I said. It was an enjoyable match that could have been horrific, but they put Kane and Mark Henry in suitable positions.
I've been watching back a lot of the 20s, obviously, to prepare for this and for the top 10 as well. And looking at the Money in the Banks, it seems like after 24 was when the Money in the Banks started losing a little bit of luster on here. And it's beginning with this one. I'm surprised that Christian didn't win it, and yet they give it to Punk. Which is weird, because I don't know which one was more surprising. Because the first one, you kind of confused as to, really? They're actually going to put their money behind Punk? Or this one, where you think, they're going to put their money behind Punk again when they jobbed him out the first time?
The first time was such a fucking boring
failure. The first time was so shit, they're going to do it again?
Well, it's worth mentioning that the crowd that night probably weren't along two dissimilar lines. I think the crowd there clearly wanted Christian to win.
Yeah.
And there are audible boos for Punk during this match, whenever he gets near that briefcase.
Yeah. Rey Mysterio, JBL, the only way that match could have been better if it was 18 seconds shorter.
How long did it go?
21.
Have you worked on that joke? That was...
No.
Well done, boys.
And I actually agree with Carl, as in a particularly great WrestleMania moment was within that Jericho handicap match. Snooker had no business being in the ring. Roddy Piper, not much better. And just seeing Steamboat in there doing the chops off the top rope, the cross bodies, but also you can't underestimate how good Jericho is this time as well.
Quick question: did you deduct points for the Mickey Rourke knockout after the match?
Watching it now, possibly. At the time, I remember being relatively hyped for it. I probably thought that like Rourke was actually going to wrestle him in some way. I thought, like, thinking about it now, yeah, that was a really bad decision, because Jericho had just turned heel the previous year, had that great one with Shawn Michaels. So Jericho was really hot as a heel right now. And so him to be knocked out by, you know, a middle-aged actor probably wasn't the best move. But saying that...
Still more convincing than Mickey Rourke's last knockout, I'll say.
Exactly. But unfortunately, due to like the two main title matches just being it's a low rated one for me.
Yeah, tough one. Like you guys, I preferred this Michaels and Taker effort to the year after. Although, was Placebo the next year?
No, next year's Placebo. We'll get to that.
Fuck, I love that video. The Hardys for me never, ever, ever clicked.
Nah, never. Never had a good match together.
Never got. They've just, yeah.
But the fans never wanted to see it.
I guess so, yeah, I guess so. Tim's the main event, yeah, everything's been said. Apart from, again, was this the one when he kissed Steph?
Yeah.
It started great.
It's that. The what highlights that the bill. It started with the punt on Vince, and then he beat up Shane. Shane comes and fucks it all up. Orton gets his heap up by knocking out Shane and then hitting the RKO on Steph. They fuck it all up again with the home invasion and some of the other bullshit they did. Heats it back up with Orton knocking out and kissing an unconscious Stephanie.
I thought that came before the.
Nope.
Oh, really?
That was their reheat because they fucked up the first one, which is the RKO on Steph.
Oh, in my
when
head.
When Triple H hooks up when he looks up at Orton, forget you, what you've done to my wife, kind of a thing.
Oh, in my head, it was a much better build then because I had that first, so.
Yeah.
Booking on the fly. And Edge, Cena, Big Show. This for me, the only thing worth saying about this match is it's this kind of match why people can't remember the difference between WrestleMania's 21 to 29.
Yeah, agreed.
Pointless guys thrown in, recycled, and completely forgettable. And Ricky Steamboat got a you still got it champ when that was actually not a cliche. In terms of rating the show, it's a tough one because really did like the Michaels match, but I think you probably round right, to be honest.
I think we'd be right to say it's better than the others we've mentioned so far. Whilst I don't think any one match is better than Austin Brett, as we referenced before, Michaels' take is certainly more than good enough. And even though we end up the same way Randy Orton always ends up with Triple H, on his back with the glazed over look in his eyes, that in itself isn't enough to knock it down for me.
Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum with another one of his fantastic bits of analysis here. And another show of waste, for the most part. Triple H Orton had a very good storyline behind it, but was completely hamstrung by a lame stipulation. Cena and Edge had their feud reheated as an afterthought to give both something to do at the big one. John Cena, a fucking afterthought. There was no excuse whatsoever for booking a guy as popular as Jeff Hardy with his loser mid-card for life brother just a few months after he broke the glass ceiling and won the WWE title. This was Jeff's last WrestleMania at the peak of his popularity, and he deserves something so much bigger. Thankfully, Jericho and Ricky Steamboat sparkled in their exchange, and Shawn Michaels vs. Undertaker was a fantastic match. Admittedly, I don't rate it as high as some, because there was zero suspension of disbelief in me that Shawn would win, and I was a little vexed that the mortal Shawn Michaels was permitted to kick out of the tombstone, but it is still one of the best matches in WrestleMania history, if not company history for me. And with that said, it seems very natural to move to number 16, which is Mania 26 from 2010. In terms of pros, again, but this is the Shawn Michaels Taker rematch, the build up to this I thought was so awesome. That the placebo running up that hill video they did with Shawn Michaels, the Johnny Cash Ain't No Grave video for Taker as well they played on Raw was absolutely fantastic. The match itself was really good. Step below the year before, because I think everybody had that foregone conclusion deep down, they knew what the finish was going to be, whereas I think the live crowd at least believed that Shawn had a chance the year previously. Cena Batista is a match that I think a lot of people sleep on. This really, really overperformed. I do like this match. I can see Carl's face wincing opposite me here, but I thought this was a really good effort. Edge and Jericho is a point of contention for a lot of people. A lot of people don't like this match. I don't love it either. It didn't work. Edge as a babyface to me never really worked after his big heel run. But I wouldn't necessarily say the match was bad. Again, it was a good effort, but the crowd wasn't with Edge. They were cheering for Jericho. The big cons of this show are the Brett Vince deal, because the match itself on the show was a disaster, and the build-up was actually even worse, because it had a ready-made angle. They spent all this time fucking rehashing the screw job and doing all these throwbacks to Montreal, and when they finally get to do Brett and Vince, they decide to make it about something else, which is just fucking hilarious. The Money in the Bank was a step too far for me. I think this was actually far more apparent than the year previously. This is where Jack Swagger wins Money in the Bank, and this is, again, it just felt like now it's just become, again, the guy who's won the last two in a row, CM Punk, in a throwaway with Rey Mysterio for 6 minutes on this show. And when you get that and combined with Jack Swagger winning this year, it was just obvious that this is now just a device for a mid-card guy to become popular for a little while before we put him back down. The rest of this card is fairly blah for me, but the two top matches on this show did deliver big, and I thought that the other match on the show, Jericho and Edge, was a very good match, even if the crowd didn't go exactly as they anticipated. So I do think, as an overall presentation, this was better than 25, because the build-up was better and there were more high-quality matches on the show.
The build to Taker Shawn is absolutely fantastic. Arguably a better build than the year previously.
I'd agree.
Now, whilst I preferred the match from the year before, that's not to say that I didn't like this match. I did like this match very much. The only thing I would say is it never quite had the emotional hook for me with the notion of it being Michaels' last match. And credit to Michaels for that, he's actually managed to stay away from the ring since, when many other notable names haven't.
We'll come to that.
We'll get there, I'm sure. But the hook isn't quite there for me with that, with the whole retirement sort of angle to it. Edge Jericho, the build for that seems off kilter with the spear.
Oh, it
doesn't click at all, does it?
No, Edge
was always better as a heel, a million miles better as a heel. That being said, I don't think it's a bad match. I still enjoy it as a match.
Yeah, me too. So
there's a dynamic that's not quite there, but as a match, it's fine. Brett, Vince, this is the interesting one for me, because I went into it sceptical solely because you never thought it could be good in-ring because of physical limitations through nobody else's fault, that, you know, those issues just are what they are. But it's one of those where you expect a little bit more sizzle on the steak, and the build is awful. It's so contrived with the way that, you know, the car angle and the faked broken leg. It's just, it screams of the company now, you know, things aren't quite complex enough. We need to muddy the waters a bit more.
It's like Orton right now, where instead of just doing the very simple, obvious thing, they've got to reach around their elbow to get to their wrist, and it just sucks.
It's not the feud, it's that we need to extend the screenplay almost. It's just,
they got time to fill, and they don't want to do it with one point. They have to try and develop things further, which just absolutely didn't work here. This is so similar to me to Cole and Lawler from 27 that we talked about last week, where if this was 5 minutes and just a complete squash, everyone would have probably been happy, but instead they dragged it out and it's killed the crowd.
As for much of the rest of the card, Triple H, Sheamus is very much a throwaway. You got the Orton legacy triple threat match, which is just shows how far down the pecking order Randy Orton had gone within the space of 12 months. Funny how that tends to happen after interaction with Triple H for Randy, isn't it?
That is funny how that happens.
Strange one. Agree with you entirely on the Money in the Bank. The Bloom is very much off the rose by that point. It's not a mania I look back with great fondness, to be honest. I put 25 above 26.
Really? Why?
Again, I've got a bias for the Ricky Steamboat stuff. I think the Money in the Bank superior to the following years, because I think Taker Sean from 25 is superior to the following years. I don't think there's not an awful lot in it. I don't think, don't get me wrong, but I would put 25 above 26. I'd give it the edge.
Okay, what are your thoughts on Cena Batista?
I glossed over that.
Yeah, but you glossed over because you gave me the evils when I mentioned it, so I don't know what your thoughts are.
It wasn't so much me trying to wince, it was more the cogs turning, because I watched this back recently, and I think sort of the last 5 minutes are really good, but I don't really care for what comes before that. I like the ending, but it's just, I feel before you get to that, it's just treading water, and I'm not really with it.
In terms of standalone show, I think you probably, what number you got this at, 16? Go a little higher. Just looking further down, we'll talk about when we come to it on the next one, but Taker, Sean, very good. And then you've got a lot of good to pretty good matches. It's a really, you know, it's a, I think it's a solid show. The Brett Vince thing's massive downside. Just atrocious. Atrocious build. Oh no, Money in Bank as well. It's like 10 guys in this one, so they're stretching it out.
Yeah, that
more
really...
guys. It's like curse. It's now it's just the cliche curse of wrestling. It's a match to get a load of guys in there. And Jack won. Jacko. Overall, maybe I might bump it up a couple of places above average. I'd say it's above average. So above, if you can average is 15, I'd go above average. So yeah, I think so.
I think anyone. I think you got this way too high. I think if you've if you find anything to defend this with, then, you know, you're a saint. This is in my bottom 10. I think of the 20s, this is the worst.
Not worse than 2017.
I think it is.
All right.
Orton defeating the two other members of Legacy, because, you know, Orton needed that win. You're absolutely right with the Money in the Bank. Completely lost luster now, and they just completely overcrowded it. And sorry, I wasn't entertained. A nothing match with Triple H Sheamus, which, you know, Triple H had to go over. Rey Mysterio CM Punk, which had the potential to be a really good match, restricted to just 6 minutes. Hart McMahon is just that feeling of just like almost vomiting my own mouth at that. Like I, as a Bret Hart fan, you know, I was kind of like in some way looking forward to it, but not as well, because I knew I wasn't going to get anything special. But all I wanted was, you know, a few punches, a stomp to the groin, and a sharpshooter, and that was it. What we got instead was 11 agonizing minutes where Brett and his almost his entire family just beat down on McMahon to the point where you almost feel sympathy for McMahon, which is just fucking ridiculous. Jericho Edge, which I was actually looking forward to this match initially, but once I got to it, there was just something hugely missing from this match. And instead, this felt to me like 15 minutes of paint drying. And it's weird for me saying that because I am a Jericho and Edge fan and I was expecting a lot from this match. My huge issue with this, apart from just the general paint drying as I was watching this at the time, I haven't really mentioned this much in terms of the previous ones that we've listed because it's not really relevant when we're talking about the lower end. Did this Mania produce a good product going out of it? Because Mania is supposed to be the end of the previous year and the start of the next. You're looking at a main event where one guy retires and the other guy's gone for a year. You have John Cena, Batista, where if I remember right, Batista didn't last much longer than this. He was around for two more pay-per-views, but then he kind of disappears as well. So that selling point of Batista being particularly good at that time, he didn't last much longer than that. Edge wasn't really getting over as a babyface. It took a long time. I mean, by the time Edge did start getting a decent babyface reaction, he was retiring.
In many respects, they saw the error of their ways and turned him heel not long after this, and the following face turn came about much more organically and worked.
Yeah. Jack Swagger cashes in
The next SmackDown.
Yeah, next SmackDown. Cashes in the Money Bank and then has one of the worst world title runs of the last 10 years, where it's just like, you know, do you remember that, folks? He was world champion at one point, right? So that Money in the Bank winner meant something. Again, Bret Hart, McMahon, McMahon's the owner. Bret isn't supposed to be fucking wrestling anyway, so there's no benefits to the company after that. Randy Orton, you know, almost kind of burying, you know, Ted DiBiase and Cody Rhodes in his tan trunks and white socks.
What the fuck did Ted DiBiase Jr. and Cody Rhodes mean at that point?
There was a moment, it was quite a while before this, but there was a moment where they were kind of hinting towards the DiBiase segregating. Babyface turn, which kind of was getting a nice reaction, but they didn't go through with it. Just everything about this show, everything about this freaking show, post this show, is atrocious.
Hold on. How you can put it as a standalone show in the bottom 10 is beyond me. I don't understand that at all. And I'm glad you've referenced what good came out of it, because we're going to get to that later with one that I know is one of your personal favourites. Now, that being said, McMahon Brett was never going to be good as an in-ring product.
It's just, with this one in particular, there was no bright side during the show, and there was no bright side.
There were some good matches.
I have to disagree with there was no bright spot during. As a standalone show, I think that there's merit there.
In no way am I putting this in the bottom 10.
I can't stand this show. There's no, beyond just the main event, there's nothing too much redeeming for me.
Everyone remember Shawn in the Rumble when he's trying to get his rematch with Taker,
and he slips, his hand slips off the top rope, and he fucking breaks down and misses by an inch.
Sure, Michaels, I love you.
Yeah, he's utterly great. WrestleMania 26 feedback here. T Lynch 106 from the F4W message board. I'd also argue that Mania 26 should be higher. Such a stacked show, and it featured HBK's great retirement. Crimes of Fashion from the F4W board also says most of the matches from 26 are slam dunks for this era. Tiger Rick from the UK fan forum. I had to Google 25 and 26 because I have so little memory of them. Even now, I'd not be sure I've even seen them, even though I have. Taker and Michaels were great both times, but the rest is a mystery to me.
I just want to say on that point, that is probably the case of almost all WrestleManias, even the classic ones we're going to get to. Yeah. Well, maybe not the tippy-top ones, but you look at the earlier ones, when you've got your classic memory of like your
Warrior Hogan,
Savage. I know we rank them shit anyway, but it's kind of a common theme anyway. It's the nature of WrestleMania. You're always going to have two talented guys in an 8-minute match, which gets completely forgotten about. So,
A wiretap from the F4W message board also says, I would put 26 a lot higher. While 26 had its share of problems, such as Bret and Vince being the complete mess it was, and some potentially good matches getting cut on time, also had some very good things on it. Take a Shawn, of course. Batista Cena, which I don't think ever gets its due, and Edge and Jericho. And something that I don't think gets appreciated enough by people who hate him, Triple H fucked off to have a mid-card feud with Sheamus that eventually led to his retirement from the full-time roster. Omega 919 from the F4W board also says, not to just repeat, but the only one I'd really argue with on this list is 26. Cena, Batista, Jericho Edge, Michaels, Taker, and Money in the Bank are all 4 stars or better. So a little bit of disagreement there. Moving on now to number 15 on the list is one that I feel we can have a great deal of debate about, because this is actually one of the more polarizing WrestleManias in history, and one of the ones I had a really hard time ranking. We're talking about WrestleMania 16 from the year 2000. Let's talk about the negatives of this show first. Obviously, it's placed pretty much dead middle in the list here. Booking of the main event is something that really sticks in people's craw when it comes to this show. And really, there's just so many reasons why I think this show kind of gets considered lower than it really should, in my opinion. I don't necessarily think this is a great WrestleMania, but I do think that, to its defense, people see this as a very disappointing show, I think, considering the year 2000, the roster they had at the time, the fact that of the first five pay-per-views of the year in the WWF, a great year for pay-per-view, this is probably the weakest of the first five. People wanted Rock and Triple H and they didn't get it. The reason why I put this here, let's get to the meat of the issue. I think it's the most average WrestleMania that I can possibly think, in the sense that nothing really offends me massively on this show. And there are no points that are as high as Austin and Bret and things like that, each of the great matches we've talked about in the WrestleMania so far. Yeah, the triple threat ladder match is very, very good and helped make all three teams into become feature players, which they would be for the next year. Angle, Jericho and Benoit I enjoyed. I know that the crowd's not completely with that match, but I enjoy that match quite a lot. And I don't think that the main event, the match in itself, is bad. I wouldn't consider it one of the best WrestleMania main events of all time. But again, to me, it just falls completely average. When I'm looking at these WrestleManias, I'm looking for things that either jump out as above par or below par. I have a hard time arguing one way or the other for this show. So I won't say necessarily a very lazy placement here at 15, but in many ways, I just, like I said, I think it's very, very average. There's some filler on the show. Yeah, you know, you get these tag matches with D'Lo and Godfather against Bossman and Buchanan. But again, to me, the negative is not that strong. The positive is not all-time classic. It bounces out fairly evenly, and it makes this a very tough one to designate. And I think that this is pretty much, even though I'm assuming a lot of people will probably disagree, this falls dead middle for me. I can't consider this worse. Because again, coming out of this show, this is a very hot year for the company. There is probably an element of nostalgia here for me, I'm not going
to
lie.
I feel like I need to go here first, because I'm probably going to be on the side of defense here. Even though there's actually only 9 matches on this card, it is very overstacked. Kind of very actually reminiscent of that WrestleMania's 5, 6 and 7 period, where they're just absolutely chock-a-block throwing everything at you, and some of it not really meaning too much. I mean, there's quite a few tag matches here. You've got the 6-man with China and Too Cool versus the Radicals
that,
as well.
That pissed me off. China getting the pin in that match is fucking appalling.
And then the one that really kind of, like, this felt weird at the time, was Rikishi and Kane versus DX. Actually, the link between Rikishi and Kane was, it just felt a bit weird and a bit tacked on.
It was a little ham-fisted. This was obviously the kind of the blow-off of the Kane X-Pac feud, so they kind of just kind of shoehorned Rikishi in. There's a long-standing rumour that Taker was originally supposed to return here, and when he didn't, they just kind of shoved Rikishi in the mix.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it should have been more just a Kane X-Pac just to kind of finish that feud. So I can understand if people thought it was too much. There was a mania that happened in the year which I love so dearly, my favourite year ever, the highest grossing year for the company as well. I wasn't too offended by Big Show, Mick Foley being in it. Would I prefer it to be just a one-on-one? Of course. But again, I was a fan of Mick Foley, so I was glad to kind of see him back again. The McMahons being in every corner did.
Yeah, that pissed me off.
Because that's what detracted from the main event for me. And I can understand if that's a big con for anybody, because it was a con for me as well. The follow-up show of Backlash was better, considerably. At the same time, I can't really say too much against it, because at that time period, they were so hot. It was probably quite easy for another pay-per-view to outshine Mania, because just the way the business was. I enjoyed the Hardcore Battle Royal. I liked the 24/7 rules at the time, in particular the Houdini of Hardcore, Crash Holly, who was over with me at that time. I thought that was a great gimmick for him. The Edge and Christian Dudley's Hardys match, I absolutely love this. This is a real big deciding factor in me in terms of how I rate it. The thing with the main event of note for me is that obviously at the time I was considerably pissed off with the finale and the way it ended. But in hindsight, I actually liked what they did with Triple H winning on this show. I thought it was unpredictable. It didn't harm Rock having to wait one more month to win it. It just made that main event so much more special. I thought it actually benefited the company on the short term and actually helped Triple H. Yeah, you stated that there's no Bret Austin in there, though I personally love the ladder match.
Closest thing is the ladder match. Across the table, I'm keen to see, because like I said, this is a very polarising one in the feedback, and I get a sense from across the table there's a very different opinion.
I think nostalgia's running wild on that side of the table, boys. The whole show, generally overbooked. The main event was just Rock, Triple H, one-on-one. It's simple. It's the biggest match they had. I disagree that it helped Triple H. I don't. It just for me, it just took the gloss off. I think with those two guys that this in this year 2000, it's given the biggest match you've got, and that was the match everyone wanted to see.
Yeah.
Angle, Benoit, Jericho. It's Angle, Benoit, Jericho, and it's average. Again, overbooked. The two title thing, I just wasn't a fan of that at the time. No way would I have this set above 25 and 26.
Okay.
I think you got your ladder match, and the rest is average at best. The ladder match is above average, good match, but it gets smoked by Shawn and Taker every time.
Me personally, I'll start with the good. The triple threat ladder match. Now let's move on to the bad. I don't actually hate Triple H winning this. Mainly, I don't mind that so much. I mind the fact that it's a four-way. You know, I don't want to see Big Show anywhere near the main event. You mentioned about being forced in at this point. I think he generally appears forced in whenever he's anywhere near the very top of the card.
Yeah.
I also love Mick Foley. I did not want to see him back. I'd gone away with happy memories, and I did not want to see a Foley who gained, what, probably 20 to 30 pounds?
In the space of about 2 weeks, which is quite impressive when you really think about it.
Well, you know, the man loved ice cream. The man loved ice cream. The lack of any notable singles matches really bothers me.
Well, there's no singles match at all, apart from one. No,
there's one. And I'm not going to go off on a rant. I'll just say it's the Cat and Terry Runnels, and people can just go from there. Much like has been echoed around the table, you know, it's McMahon-a-mania running wild, and I was excited to see the Radicals and then dismayed with the way they were treated. You know, to me it was too much to have.
Oh,
too
come on. That's terrible. I'm leaving that in just so people can hear how terrible that was.
Well, I hope so. That, you know, terrible by design. China going over is just offensive.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned there's nothing overly negative or offensive. That is offensive.
Yeah, I may have missed that.
And even G, in his defence of the show, talked about major cons. When you're going on major cons for a show, I don't see how you can put it in the top 10. I would put it in the middle 10, but it would be low down in the middle 10 for me.
Just to go back again, it's the feel of this WrestleMania is where they dropped the ball. It should have been the iconic Triple H Rock match, and instead it was the year 2000, so we're going to call it 2000, and the only reason Foley and Big Show are in is obviously for the McMahons, for that gimmick, and that whole premise for this show of WrestleMania 2000, you know, the turn of the century, it should have been the two iconic, and it's not an iconic match. Triple H from Rock, they could have had an iconic match which would have gone down as a WrestleMania moment. Instead, it's this overbooked piece of shit with the McMahons for no apparent reason. So it's just a sour taste in my mouth. Rank average isn't average on this list because there's shows with better stuff on that deserve to go ahead, in my opinion. So I think your rationale was slightly flawed.
That's okay, I can take that. Just to get to some feedback here, Hawkeye from Pro Wrestling Only says 16 is down there with 15 and 27 as the all-time worst for me. I hate multi-man matches, so no points for the tag team.
You're here
three-way.
On that one. Yeah.
And the show,
preach, brother, preach.
And the show's only singles match is the Cat and Terry. Triple H is the first heel to walk out with a belt, just capped off a terrible show. Jazzy Foot from TPWW Forum says WrestleMania 16 ranks as one of my personal worst WrestleManias. Colin Bollocks from the UK Fan Forum says 2000 wasn't a bad show. Martin Short turned up, for fuck's sake. The main event being what it was definitely shaves off a couple of snowflakes, though. If they did a Rock vs. Triple H main event, I'm sure it wouldn't get half the abuse that it does. I suppose the standards, particularly the main events, were so high in 2000 that anything below excellent was seen as rubbish. And Dr. Peter Venkman from the UK Fan Forum is back in here. 2000's main event is underrated. The triple threat was quality. The tag ladder match was amazing. Cat and Terry were both fit in their match, which is all they were there for. Plus, that pre-show thing they did made the whole thing seem like a massive deal, as Mania should be. I agree about the swerve at the end being shit. Didn't Vince say in a promo the night after Mania that he did it because The Rock never said thanks for Vince making him a star? I would say that the swerve got them where they needed to be, but that's Nash's defense with a finger poke of doom. A ladies man 345 from the UK Fan Forum just sums it up with, Michael Cole, you little shithead. which is Bob Holly's line. And Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum also has some particularly strong thoughts here. No show in the history of the WWF disappointed me more than WrestleMania 16, because the roster had never been stronger and the TV was enjoyable every week. The pay-per-views were enjoyable and they should have had no problem whatsoever knocking out a Mania that, even if it wasn't memorable for other reasons, at least could have delivered a card of great matches. I have no idea who looked at that card and said, "That'll be ace." It looks like the prototype for the modern, let's get everyone on the card whether they deserve it or not. Maybe I just hate it because I think of Mania as where you have your big feuds blown off in the big singles matches, and short of Cat and Terry, there isn't a bastard singles match to be seen! The main event left a real bad taste in my mouth from the moment it was set up, as Mick Foley was pissing away what had been a superb bowing out at No Way Out, and I thought him and Big Show belonged nowhere near the main event scene, which should have been Rock executing Triple H and taking his place at the summit where he belonged. That's WrestleMania! The match itself was plodding and meandering at points, and by the end I just wanted it to be over, and when it did, it was the wrong ending! Fuck me off no end! It literally felt like they were going for unpredictable for the sake of it. Literally the only thing on that Mania I choose to watch again ever is the tag team title ladder match, which for a 2000 pay-per-view is amazing, never mind Wrestle fucking Mania.
That was cathartic. I think Air Raid feels better.
When I first wrote this list last year, I had this a couple of steps higher, and every year when I think about it more and more, it's going down and down and down. Alright, moving along now to number 14 on my list, which is taking us back to 1991 and WrestleMania 7. This is a very, very fun show for me. Obviously, the highlight of the show is the Ultimate Warrior Randy Savage match, the career-ending match, if you will. As a start-to-finish presentation, including, you know, the pre-match, the post-match, everything about this, it was so superbly done, to the point where, after I went back and watched this match a few years ago, after not seeing it for a while, and not only did it hold up better than I expected, but the entire thing is just so completely on point. The live crowd is awesome. The post-match is awesome. Gorilla and Bobby Heenan on commentary is great. I love Gorilla and Heenan as a commentary team on this show, the first of two WrestleManias that they would call. Hearts Nasties is a really good match on the undercard. The Rockers with a really good match in the opener. Bossman Perfect is really fun. There's a lot of good sprinkled throughout the undercard. Not just average or decent, but stuff that you can really, really get into. And obviously the Savage Warrior match really kind of is the one that really kind of carries this through WrestleMania history. The big con of this show, obviously this is WrestleMania 7, they're still in that habit of booking too many matches. Similar symptoms to 6 and 5 in terms of an overcrowded show. The main event angle, context of the time and big picture. Hogan's slaughter was the beginning of the noticeable downturn in the WWF business at the time. After riding high for quite a while, 91, the Gulf War angle, the exploitation of the Gulf War and putting Hogan with Slaughter, and Slaughter, you know, Saddam Hussein's favorite wrestler. It's just it sucks. It sucks. It sucked before. It sucks after. They were so insecure about the fact that this didn't go into the LA Memorial Coliseum and went into the LA Sports Arena.
And why was that then?
Because Saddam Hussein threatened to nuke Hulk Hogan in the middle of the ring, apparently. According to a story that the WWF still sticks to this day, which is just shocking. And after years of the WWF being kind of considered that kind of, oh, it is what it is, entertainment by the media, and kind of gave it a pass, kind of looked, you know, kind of laughed at it. You can actually say, I've been reading a lot about this kind of period of time in the old Observers recently, where this was the real noticeable turning point in the media, just looking at wrestling and you know what, this isn't just harmless entertainment. This there's serious implications here. The media was looking for scandal after this, and boy did they find it. So insecure with a company that they actually had Gorilla Monsoon on the air say that this was the most purchased WrestleMania in the history of pay-per-view, which is incredible knowledge considering the pay-per-view was still going on at the time, and buy rates to this day don't come in that fast. It's a horrible choice for a main event. The direction of the company after this was horrible with the Hogan Slaughter rematches. There's such a dour note to this show in terms of what it meant for the big picture overall in the company, that the good matches, way, you know, the good matches obviously bring it up. Warrior Savage, Hearts Nasties, fun match with the Rockers, Bossman Perfect, like I've mentioned. The overriding negative stops this from getting a little bit higher.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'd put 25 and 26 above this one as well, as in better, but you got your one great match, you got a couple of, you know, good tags on there, and a lot of dross. Yeah, perfect boss man fun.
Shitty ending though.
This would be, you know, pretty close to middle ground, I think, is a fair assessment for me. But again, maybe 25, 26. Honestly, I probably enjoy them more top to bottom. Yeah, some people probably rank this much higher than, I guess, both of us.
Fairly happy with this placement?
Yeah, not too bad. Again, there's much better.
To me, this is much like WrestleMania 13 in the sense of how great a stock you can put in that one match to bump it up. because as much as I really love Ultimate Warrior Randy Savage, let's be honest about the implications just for that match alone. Everything that happens on that night is great, it's fine. For a retirement match and career ending, Savage never goes away from TV and he's reinstated before the end of the year. The rest of the card, I do not have much love for. I mean, Slaughter Hogan is better than anyone thought it would have any right to be, but the build is horrific. The negative implications you've touched upon there, for a company that is known to do some tasteless things, this is right up there. And the fact that it gives the media an axe to grind against the company, everyone knows the story following on from that and what was unearthed and what was sensationalised and what wasn't, and a certain individual went to trial because of it. You can maybe argue that, okay, it's the start of the streak.
No one cares.
But that comes back, that comes about sort of following on by accident. No one can ever claim this was the plan from the start and Jimmy Snuka was washed up even then.
He's washed up the second he came back.
Well, that's exactly. Tornado against Dino Bravo.
Neither of whom would live to see WrestleMania 9, I don't believe.
Yeah, British.
Lucky then.
Yeah. British Bulldog against the Warlord is terrible.
I disagree with that.
I will say, yeah, I remember I marked out like a motherfucker when Bulldog broke the Paul Nelson.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, Bulldog, you strong motherfucker.
Yeah, but Warlord's looking at his hands afterwards. That was great stuff, Carl.
Earthquake Greg Valentine only goes 3 minutes. If it had gone another 12 minutes, Valentine might have had a chance because, you know, 15 minutes to warm up.
Of course.
But it doesn't happen and the tremors start and it's all over.
Mountie Santana, I think, goes about a minute.
Just over a minute. I know G loves this match, but I don't. The blindfold match. The blindfold match. It's a great example of crowd manipulation by Jake Roberts, but as a match, it's poor. It's not enjoyable. Outside of Warrior Savage, there is nothing on this that I really enjoy.
Not even Hearts Nasties?
No, because it's the Nasty Boys, and I don't like the Nasty Boys. Detest them.
What about Rockers in the opener? That's a decent effort. That's a really good effort.
No, it's average at best. Come on. And as I can see, G is primed and desperate to ingest the microphone. He made a reference earlier in criticism of a previous WrestleMania saying, what good came out of it? So, what good came out of WrestleMania 7?
First off, I'll just start by saying this is in my top 10, and that this is number 5. I'm going to admit, this is one's guilty of having the biggest help in terms of nostalgia. This one's going to hold a special place in my heart. This was the first Mania I ever watched, so it's going to have such a strong... It's going to resonate so strongly with me, no matter what anybody says about it. I can see where like Carl was going in terms of what good came out of it after my burial of 26, and yeah, that's absolutely fair in terms of particularly with the main event with Hogan as well. In terms of the main event scene with no Macho Man around, it wasn't great. I will admit that the follow up to this show is not good in any way, shape, or form. There is some dross on the show. As Carl so eloquently described, you know, with the Texas Tornado, Dino Bravo, and you know, so on and so forth. Some of these little kind of matches, you know, the tag match with Demolition as well. I thought Demolition should have been used better. I thought Power and Glory should have been used better, certainly. Legion of Doom, I would like to have seen more from them, but obviously they were in that Heart Foundation spot from Mania 6 where they get that the quick win, you know, like, oh yeah, you know, they crush a team.
This is the next big team kind of a thing.
Yeah, next big team, basically, yeah, which is essentially what it was. Now, I'm not the biggest Hogan fan at all. In terms of this this storyline leading up to it, when I'm judging this show, in 1991, at the age of 7, I didn't give a flying fuck about the Gulf War. It's something I obviously didn't know about, so it was never an issue with me. As far as a 7-year-old me was watching the show, all I could establish was Sergeant Slaughter used to be a good guy, he liked America, now he's joined these other guys that like growing mustaches too. And basically he's an asshole now, and now Hogan, who has a better mustache, is now going to try and convince him that he should support America again. That's all I saw. Now, you know, over 20 years later, guess what? It's still a non-factor for me now because it's history.
I guess I agree with you, to be honest. I've never been offended. Maybe it's just because I'm just it's wrestling, and me personally, I agree with you. I wasn't offended, and I still don't think it's a dirty tactic compared to the stuff like the Eddie stuff.
That was awful.
It's if I remember right, when with the Hassan character in 2005, there's a whole thing. Was it that around the time of the London bombings?
Yeah, they did the angle. The London bombing happened, and they just fucking aired the angle anyway.
Exactly. All I can tell you now, I didn't suddenly turn around and say, "Whoa, well." That's close to the mark. At the end of the day, folks, we're watching wrestling. I'm not counting something that's happening in real life and thinking like, Saddam Hussein definitely sent those boots to Sergeant Slaughter. Obviously, he fucking did. It's fucking wrestling.
I wouldn't necessarily disagree. However, it's not necessarily that it affected your personal enjoyment or mine either. The issue with it in terms of ranking it lower is the impact, like I said, on the business afterwards. What are your thoughts on that?
It is, because that falls into the point that Carl was making about, you know, when I was burying 26. To have this on top, it did do damage. From that standpoint, I kind of hold my hands up to that and say, you know, that as I said, you know, that there is some dross in there, but it's a few minutes, it's a few blinks of the eyes, and it's gone. So I concentrate on the positives of why I love this show, right? Blindfold match. It's a plus in my column. I can understand why people don't like it. I personally do. Big fan of Jake Roberts. I like Rick Martel as well. In fairness, if the crowd, which is another plus, the crowd being so hot, if the crowd wasn't hot for this match, fuck. Then we're really talking about how bad it could have been. It was solely dependent on Jake being able to get those guys to react every time he moved his finger across the ring, pointing to Rick Martel. And there's some funny little spots in it. It's an entertaining little match. Bossman, perfect. I've only just yesterday finally got to see this match again in its entirety. Because unfortunately, I mean, one of these people had the Silver Vision version of the show.
Yeah, edited the fuck out of this
show. It's like 3 minutes. I remember watching the recent DVD back and just thinking, this is not what I remember. So, praise the network, I was able to watch the original broadcast, and this match is really good. Savage Warrior, amazing match. My favourite WrestleMania match of all time. So, whilst you guys will bunk up Bret Austin as high as you can, and so you should if it's your favourite match. For me, I can't not have this in my top 10, particularly considering that unlike 13, there are other things on this show that helps it
I'd
be placed in the top 10.
You know, well, I'm in the top 10, but I agree with your logic. You
know, while 13 is just one match, for me, it's more than just one match that makes it show.
Yeah, let's see what you guys think. Soup23 from Pro Wrestling Only. The only mania of this batch I would champion as being higher would be 7. One of the best mania matches of all time, in my opinion, and at the least, some of the best WWF storytelling in history. A really good opener, really good tag title match, and a bloody main event. I would find a way to sneak WrestleMania 7 into my top 10 manias overall. Doink Bra from the UK fan forum disagrees. 7 is really awful. USA propaganda, cashing in on a real life war, many awful matches, rotating commentators, and a terrible main event. The only saving grace is the obvious Warrior vs Savage match, but it doesn't scream WrestleMania at me. More house shows surrounded with the American flag plastered everywhere. It's a horrid show. Good Helmet from Pro Wrestling Only disagrees and says 7 is a top 10 show for me. And Reznor from the UK fan forum says 7 is a wonderful mania, one of the best. Every match that they gave any time to was great. The only black marks were the bits of undercard filler which bloated the card a bit, but they were so short and never interfered with the marquee matches, so were insignificant. I'd have it top 5 easy, and even higher with the nostalgia effect being factored in. JimBob5 from F4W says, WrestleMania 7 was a solid show, with Savage Warrior, Hearts Nasties, Bossman Perfect, and Rockers vs. Faces of Fear all being from very good to near classic. Hogan Slaughter was a far better match than anyone could have hoped for, as were Bulldog Warlord and DiBiase Virgil. The poor matches were kept short, and although it was awful from a wrestling perspective, the blindfold match was hilarious. So a lot of positive there for Mania 7, although there was a few people who differ and kind of share a similar opinion to yourself, Carl. Next up on this list is WrestleMania 8. 1 year later, this is at number 13 on the list from 1992. One of my personal favourites of the argument, I'm not going to put it in the top 10 because the second half of the show is particularly rank, including another awful Sid Justice main event. Thank you very much. But the two key matches on this show, obviously Flair and Savage, which I think is the most unsung great match by the other company in the history of WrestleMania. Love the way that this match goes. Perfect on the outside is brilliant. Heenan on commentary adds to the whole presentation, and there's so many great near falls back and forth that I just absolutely adore this match, and as well as Bret Hart and Roddy Piper, which obviously is the other classic on this show. Really good match. You know, you get blood in two matches here on this show, which is pretty fun. The dome setting really helped this one. I watched this at the time after last year's WrestleMania we just mentioned, inside an arena basically, and the return of the Warrior at the end of the show was a very nice surprise after a rather rank main event. Everything else is kind of in the cons section in my opinion here, in terms of, again, a lot of stuff in the undercard, like the 8-man tag that really isn't worth a fuck, and the Tonka Martel, yeah. But I off the strength of those two matches, this is one of those WrestleManias that I can just watch back and have an enjoyment for it that I can't say for a lot of the ones that we've talked about so far. Yet the ones like 25 and 26 will feel like a slog to get through to me at various points because of the weakness of the show. And whether it's nostalgia, I don't know how exactly you want to phrase it, but for me, Mania 8, based on the strength of those two matches, based on the positive surprise at the end of Warrior making the return, I don't hold any real negative feelings about this. So the main event's terrible. There's I think it's like an 8-minute match with a 2-minute test of strength. There's not much that can be said about Hogan Sid that's positive, including a fucked up run-in at the main event.
Don't forget the nerve hold. There was a nerve hold in there.
Oh yeah, the nerve hold in there too. That's good stuff. And a really weak powerbomb. I'm keen to see how people shake kind of rate this compared to 7. There's some opinions in the feedback that 7 and that I'd rank too high.
I'd rank this fairly high off the back of the two matches you've referenced there. The build to Savage Flair, I love. You know,
vintage Flair in those promos.
She was mine before she was yours, and the doctored photos in WWF magazine, and the threat to put the naked Elizabeth shot up there for everyone to see
on the big screen.
But that was really good. Bret Piper is great, and is the cementing of Bret as a singles guy,
which would be very important later in the year.
Absolutely, and a rare pinfall loss for Roddy Piper.
Yeah. Great pre-match build,
yeah,
their
interplay is great as well. The old bologna sandwich.
Not today!
Piper really sort of, pardon the pun, but hamming it up, if you like, sort of thing. Jake continues his poor run of WrestleMania's, in my opinion. Again, he's got another great promo before that match, which helps a bit. But outside of the two matches we've referenced there in any sort of detail, the rest is poor to awful. You know, Ray, Bobby and Gorilla are at their peak here. This, along with the Rumble back in January of that year, I think is those two at their peak.
Yeah, the highlight of the Tatanka Martel match is Heenan getting upset.
Thank God for that bit during that match, because that was really dull. And thankfully, as you say, a noticeably smaller looking Ultimate Warrior, I should say.
It was just his haircut, dude.
Was it just a haircut?
All in the bob.
Well, I've been accused of my eyesight not being quite right sometimes, and I'll defer to you on that one.
But just before we pass this on though, Carl, to you, do those two matches bring it up to this level? Do you find this ranking acceptable in your mind, based off the strength of those two great matches?
Yeah, it's I can't remember if it's exactly the same number I placed that, but it's in the same, certainly in the same ballpark.
I originally had 8 in my top 10. I can, in good conscience, have this in my top 10. So I've actually ended up dropping this down to 15. All the bad is blatant as it is, which is basically the second half of the show. I mean, you know, you got a decent Shawn Michaels, Tito Santana at the start, and Undertaker Jake Roberts didn't like insult me in any way. It was decent. Everything after the Savage Flair, it just falls off a fucking cliff.
Yeah, we've neglected to mention Natural Disasters Money Inc., which is fucking atrocious. Typhoon struggling to get over the top rope, an appropriate metaphor for the rest of this match.
Well, there's never been a more apt name for a tag team other than the Natural Disasters, let's be honest.
This absolutely falls off a cliff halfway through the show, more than any other show in this 30. It's drastic. What the difference is, so like the first half of the show, you're thinking like, this is pretty solid. This could be the setting as well, to go into settings and the arena looks big, potentially, if it wasn't for two matches, one of the worst, I think, from a match-by-match basis. The main event is atrocious, and I pretty much always stop watching the show after the Savage Ric Flair match. Obviously, as a kid, love the fact that Savage came back to win the title. It is criminal that this was on in the middle of the show. It would have been criminal if it was the penultimate match. It should have gone on last. It was the title match, for fuck's sake. I think that match, even by that high standards, is overshadowed by the sheer brilliance of Bret Hart and Roddy Piper. It sounds stupid to say it. It gets lost in the shuffle when talking about great Mania matches. They go to Bret Austin, they go to Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, and they go to you know, the ladder match at 10, or even Bret and Owen at 10. This one is almost forgotten about, and it really shouldn't. I think it's underrated within the brackets of great Mania matches, and but unfortunately, two matches don't make the show fantastic, so it ends up just being in the top 15.
Owen Hart and Skinner in the semi-main.
Owen and Skinner go a minute, I think.
Uh-huh. I think the biggest thing, I think both 7 and 8, and hearing, it's not even nostalgia, there was definitely a feel to the product then which made even like the wacky bullshit characters seemed bigger stars than a wacky bullshit character today because of the setting. A throwaway match on a Mania is still a match you wouldn't get on TV, even if it goes 2 minutes. It's like, yeah, when you're used to squashes predominantly for throughout the year, and there is a feel to those early shows. When you got Heenan on there as well, there is something, an intangible element to it. I don't think it's technically nostalgia. There's a personality to them, and I think maybe it's better storytellers on commentary. That definitely helps.
Do you think maybe it's partly to do with that point in time as well, there being less pay per views then in comparison to now, where it's the glut.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a bigger occasion. It's because we don't, you know, you're not getting it all the time. Obviously, I think you could make the argument up to 9. They felt special. 9 was a real first downturn, a real downturn. But in terms of placement, I don't know. Can I put? I think it's, you're in the right ballpark. Obviously, in the middle pack. I just think with all these middle 10, to be honest, it's two. You got two good matches, but it's normally one or two, one and a half good matches, and it's really your personal preference on those. It's more of an overriding factor. Negates the logistics of watching a show in real time without breaks. If you watched all these shows back to back in order and you have to sit there and watch it, this show gets a much lower mark. Look at there's been a lot of great matches at WrestleMania, so, and it's not trying to rank them and quantify them.
True, but at the same time, do you think there's been a WrestleMania yet where there's been two matches on the same show this good?
What about Shawn Taker, Cena, Batista?
You
think, is though, you say that, and it's going to be, people are going to be more favourable to a good Piper Hart match than a good match with two guys from, you know, the last 10 years, and I don't necessarily think that's a fair assessment.
Alright, so just to continue, Air Raid from UK Fanform also chimed in on this one, saying any show that has two matches as well crafted and dramatic as Flair Savage and Piper Hitman deserves to be rated very highly. A lot of the rest is take it or leave it, but those two matches will keep you coming back time and time again. It's a fun time for the company anyway, so the rewatch value is decent, but those two matches. Crimes of Fashion from the FOW board also says the first half of 8 is as good as any Manias. If that card's match order had been better arranged, it would be a top 10 WrestleMania, which is an interesting point. Moving on now to number 12 on this list, WrestleMania 24 from 2008. This is one that I'm actually really, really keen to discuss, because as a standalone show, I think you could make a case for this being in the top 10, a really strong case. We're getting to the ones now on the outer fringes of the top 10. Michaels and Flair is a very enjoyable match. I thought that the way the Mayweather-Big Show match turned out was very good for what it could have been. Taker and Edge is a good match. I think one of the most, if not the most, underrated Money in the Bank matches as well on this show. I really like the Money in the Bank match on this show. In terms of things that I didn't like about this show, we talked about this at WrestleMania 11, where LT and Bigelow and the outside superstar coming and beating one of your B-tier players just further cements him as a B-tier player, and all you get coming out of it is the buy rate, is any money that you drew from this standalone show. Yeah, the Flair Michaels match is good, but I don't have the overwhelming love of this that some people do. I think that it was the best you're gonna get out of Flair at this point, but by no means can this be called a classic. I think Taker and Edge is a really good match, but the crowd's dead for most of it. It takes them a while to really get into it. The most annoying thing on this show for me is Triple H sticking his fucking nose in the Cena Orton match, and we'd see this for a few years after this. This is just such a perfect scenario of Cena and Orton, who really should have been the centerpiece at this period of time. Cena holds the belt for a long, long time, gets injured, you know, during a feud with Orton. After Orton kicks his dad in the face, Orton then becomes the champion. Cena makes the awesome surprise return at the Royal Rumble. It's custom made for the rematch at WrestleMania. Cena Orton, ultimate revenge. And then Triple H, just because he has to shoehorn his way in, has to gravy train his way into another world title match main event. It just absolutely sucks the fun out of the build up for that match, and it means nothing. It means nothing on that card. Taker and Edge, which was a match that people had anticipated for a while, but going in, I didn't think the build for this was anything special at all. Flair's storyline going into this show was done in a very lackluster way. Matches over MVP and Kennedy on the previous two pay-per-views didn't mean anything. They were gutless about the match in Greensboro with Triple H, where they couldn't put Flair over because Triple H didn't want to do a job again. I've got a very sour feeling about this period of time in general, which hurts me from putting this in the top 10. As a standalone show, it's very enjoyable. A lot of very good matches. Issues with the product at the time that really hold this one back for me from putting it in the top 10.
I wasn't fond of the opening match with, Bitch Titch Bradshaw. You know, the ECW championship basically being murdered on that show.
It was dead by that point.
Oh, it was dead by that, you know.
Let's not cry over ECW. It's 2008 here.
Exactly. So there is some bad on here, but there's also, as you said, there's some good in here. And the good is good enough where it's not worthy of being in the top 10, but I think being placed at number 12 is exactly right, and it's a very worthy place for it to be, where it just misses out, because if they just made a few little nicks and changes here and there, it might have moved it higher up. I agree with you. I didn't remember at the time the Money in the Bank being this good, but watching it back the other day, it is very good. Batista Umaga wasn't a bad match. It was, you know, it was only 7 minutes long. It was a decent little match. You know, Mayweather Big Show. Mayweather was such a great natural heel. It was just like, I don't even know why they even thought they should cast him as a babyface when it started. Shawn Michaels Flair is the big thing I remember about this show. With 25 and 26 being Shawn Michaels' Undertaker, this is the big match I remember. And you're right, Ric Flair couldn't go much at this time. I liked a little bit of the build, you know, where HBK was talking about the old Yeller story, and he's going to, you know, blow his brains out, you know. I thought for what it was, I thought the match was really good from an emotional standpoint. It was just really well done. Shawn Michaels, Jesus, he that freaking moonsault to the outside, which almost looks like it split him in half.
Which one? You got the one on the table that he almost kills himself on. You got the one from the top to the floor, which Flair basically just lets him fall to the ground and kills himself. Makes no effort to catch him at all.
The one where he doesn't catch him is bad, and you can see like Michaels just wince. You can't deny those closing moments where Shawn is just in the corner and he's gonna fire the gun.
I love you.
He's gonna fire the gun, and it's just like it was one of those moments that actually generally got like emotion out of me, like with Savage Warrior. Where, you know, Ric Flair, he's done and dusted, he's getting up, he's on his arms up, and it's like...
He's crying as he's getting up, which just looks great.
In reality, he's crying because he knows the end's in sight now. And as Kieran just kind of mouthed, you know, Shawn Michaels just says, you know, I'm sorry, I love you, and just like, poof, finishes him off. And it's just such a beautifully done moment. It's a shame Flair fucked it up by wrestling in TNA.
Good enjoyable show. The biggest thing I just want to talk about is the Mayweather Big Show. I don't see how you can have any problem with it.
I don't really have a massive problem with it.
Are you going to get out of Big Show? What have you ever got out of Big Show?
Trust me.
Why are you getting Mayweather in? It's to make fucking money. What's the point in wrestling in the first place? To make money. So if you made money off it, there is no fair.
And that's fine, but at the same time, if you're going to spend that much money to get a guy like that, then surely you can do something that's going to make something for the future too. Or does it have to be a standalone? Okay, well, that was nice. Now let's go back to what? Because they had fuck all after this. That's the problem.
Do what? So you put...
Because the original plan was to put him in a team.
So you try and... Oh, yeah, I can see that. That's... So you try and... Okay, if he's in the team. But he's not in the team. If he's going one-on-one with someone, what's your finish?
Oh, he has to win. I've got no problem with him winning. But like I said, put him in a team. Put him where someone can get over through osmosis through Mayweather. If this is going to be...
Would they? It's the poster. It's all about the poster. It's the hook for the match. It's on that billboard in Times Square. That's what it's about. And they look up and the picture for this, and they've even airbrushed Big Show's tits, I think, so they look pretty. <funny. laughs> And like he's coming up to, you know, his dick, and it's like, wow, is he going to make him suck him off in the middle of the ring? Can he even get his dick in his mouth? These questions are asked on that billboard alone. This is why tickets got sold and pay-per-views bought. And I just think you put someone else in there and it's like an average guy, fuck it, sacrifice Big Show. He is a gimmick, so stick him in the gimmick feuds. It doesn't matter if he wins or loses because they killed him months and years ago, so I have no problem with it. The thing about Mayweather, they brought him in thinking he's going to be a face, I guess, because he's a star, and that's their set position is always the stars are
a babyface,
except it's fucking Floyd Mayweather, who's like the
biggest heels in the biggest sports.
Yeah.
Just to chime in just on the point you're making, how great was that initial beginning though, when he like
the No Way Out angle
when he teed off on the
Oh, Big Show looks so fucking pissed.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
But it's even that point, because it was that was a fine little fun little baby show thing, but it was the entourage. It just what a fucking dick. And like
and the crowd turned, they completely dictated the pace of this too in the build up, where in the end it became wrestling versus boxing, and of course wrestling takes it on the chin again.
Yeah.
But, no pun intended.
Yeah. Fun show, Big Show feel to it. Edge Taker, I wasn't into it maybe as much as some people, because just Taker was winning for me.
Formality, the crowd treated it like a formality too for most of the match. They only came alive at the very end.
And as you say, Triple H, this is a recurring theme of these, when you're going through these manias in these recent years, of Triple H inserting himself in places he shouldn't be. Good Money in the Bank match again. So no, it was a good fun show, I think. So no problem with the placement.
I understand that the parts that you don't like about it, I see the logic completely. I agree with Keir when it comes to Mayweather though. It's Big Show, you get nothing out of him, screw it, just sacrifice him to Mayweather. No one cared about Big Show years prior, no one was likely to care years after, so screw it. The Flair build is muddled a bit before it gets to the final couple of weeks, and I understand the notion that he sort of tainted it with his TNA run, but in terms of what happened in that moment, the emotion is, it's the emotion I get from that I don't get from the Michaels retirement with The Undertaker. I think it's a real apples to oranges comparison, because like you referenced, the tears in Flair's eyes, the I'm sorry I love you, it's all just it just all culminates in that one, that sort of one brilliant moment. I understand the criticism of Triple H inserting himself into the triple threat match, but I don't dislike it as a match, and at least in my mind the right guy goes over at the time.
But the thing is, it gets completely nullified when the player when Triple H gets the belt anyway. Cena came back he came back early to be just a guy in the match.
Yeah, but it didn't really harm. It didn't harm Cena going.
Of course not. But it's just the wrong thing at the wrong time.
No, I understand the frustration, but I think it's fine as a match. It's actually my favourite Money in the Bank of the WrestleManias. It's the one I find the most enjoyable, and the crowd weren't quite with Edge Taker to start with. But again, I thought it was a really enjoyable match, and it sends the crowd home happy. So, all in all, an enjoyable show, which does crack my top 10.
Rossi Vegas from F4W Online says, 24 is way too low, given that it was voted Show of the Year on the Wrestling Observer newsletter, and only one other mania has ever managed to achieve that feat, which is WrestleMania 17. So, a little bit of an interesting fact there. Which brings us to the final WrestleMania on our list this week. It is at number 11... Big Time, WrestleMania 22 from 2006. This is a really enjoyable show. 2006 was a particularly shite year for the company. I really didn't enjoy this year. Again, another one of these years where they harken back to nostalgia. After the show, the whole DX thing comes to life. The ECW reunion comes to life. With the exception of Cena Edge, there was really nothing this year to sink your teeth into. But as a standalone show, again, hot crowd here. Really hot crowd. You get Shawn and Vince in a really fun street fight that completely exceeded expectations. I thought the main event with Cena and Triple H, where you got the crowd who absolutely despises Cena at this point, far before it became, the copycat thing that it has become today, the kind of parody of itself. Three-way with Ray, Angle, and Orton, we can get into. But for what it was, considering the fact it was only 9 minutes, it's a very fun 9-minute match. Money in the Bank, I really enjoyed this year. Van Damme gets the win, so that was, and then, coming off the first Money in the Bank the year previous, I thought this was a really, really strong effort. And Edge Foley obviously needs to be mentioned here as well, as another really cracking match in their no holds barred street fight match. Just a lot of really, really strong stuff. The Undertaker versus Mark Henry is pretty piss poor. It was weird because the whole thing of this WrestleMania that made it quite fun at the time was the fact that Triple H, it was for months, it was kind of common knowledge on the internet that Triple H was going to main event and win as a heel and beat John Cena. The build-up to this WrestleMania, with Cena looking like a complete chump and Triple H becoming pretty much the de facto babyface to the fans. The fans are chatting one more night or one more day at the Hall of Fame the day before, because they all believe that Cena's losing, only for Cena to go over, which just gets some classic looks from the fans at WrestleMania 22. But a really cracking match. Underrated, I think. And just an overall big picture, summon the spirit of Eddie Guerrero and put it into Rey Mysterio's body for this push, completely devalued what should have been a really noteworthy occurrence with Mysterio winning the belt. By the time they get to this WrestleMania, the fans are booing Rey Mysterio in Chicago, so that should tell you how bad a job they did with the Mysterio push to the world title. But again, overall, so much to enjoy as a standalone show. Direction coming in and going out, again, they sidebarred off the Cena Edge direction to get to the ham-fisted Triple H direction. Notes a pattern here. And more so than any other WrestleMania, I think, a level of quality throughout.
It's a fun show that the crowd make really enjoy.
Yeah.
Like you say, it's a hot Chicago crowd. It's a fun main event, really enjoy it. I enjoyed the Money in the Bank, and it's a Money in the Bank that we mentioned the Swagger on there, which is very forgetful and may as well have never happened. This one does actually lead somewhere with the One Night Stand show further down the road.
Van Damme gets the belt.
With Van Damme finally getting the belt. The Shawn Michaels-Vince match, as you say, really well constructed and exceeds all expectations. I could do without seeing the Vince Muscle and Fitness cover ever again.
Great!
And his shocking tan.
It's pretty
really
bad,
shocking. Yeah. And the only time it was worse than that was his Rumble match with Flair. But really enjoyable match. Foley Edge, like I say, it's the WrestleMania where they didn't stick with the plan. They didn't stick with the plan where Cena loses to Triple H, and the argument was always, well, if you weren't going to stick with the plan, why not insert Edge into that main event? But at least the right thing happens here, and Foley, as much as some people will criticise Foley for the way he came back, and I wish he hadn't, you know, by and large. But at least when he does come back, he does the right sort of selfless thing, going after his mentor Terry Funk and puts Edge over, and it, you know, it certainly doesn't do Edge any harm the way he comes out of the match. You know, to me, it helps him going forward. I think it gives him almost a level of toughness. Maybe I give a lot of the divas or females stick. It would be remiss if I didn't mention the Mickey James Trish match, where a lot of males discover their second puberty almost. There is some bad on this show. Boogeyman. Mm-hmm. Boogeyman and Booker's not good.
Booker T beaten here by the Boogeyman. 3 months before becoming the world champion.
I'm not the biggest fan of the JBL Benoit match, largely because it ties into the exploitation of the Eddie storyline again, where you get JBL doing the little shimmy that Eddie used to do.
Well, Cheap Heat was his thing, you know.
And the triple threat, like you say, it was booked in such a piss-poor way where the Chicago crowd were desperate for Angle to win. The story really should have been the underdog, you know, 5'2" guy who's overcome all the odds, and this is the great moment for him. You know, I know it's not the first Mexican champion, but, you know, there aren't many of them, so again, you can emphasise that point. A masked guy who's world heavyweight champion. All those things that you could have mentioned that would have helped. Whereas instead, as I've referenced before, you know, it may as well have been Eddie Guerrero in Rey's body, because it was all about Eddie and not about Rey. I actually have this at the same number as yourself on the rankings as well.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty fair assessment. I think you said it, Lee, it's a good quality show, really top to bottom overall, apart from the odd anomaly. Yes, Cena beating Triple H was a lot of fun. It's nice to get worked once in a while. And
we all thought we were so fucking clever.
Yeah, so that was fun. Mysterio, Angle, Orton, just like the curse of WrestleMania is not long enough, and never mind the Rey and Eddie issues that have already been mentioned. Money in the Bank, fun, and only 6 guys at this point, so that was kind of a big plus as well. Foley Edge, as you said, was really fun, and I think you say, given the toughness, it kind of felt kind of legitimised Edge, really, in my eyes. It was all the other stuff he'd done previously, but this was kind of like at a different level in terms of profile.
Toughness probably isn't the right word for me to use there. I think legitimised is much more accurate, and it, like you say, it cements him in a place where he'd only had the belt for 3 weeks, so it can get passed off as a fluke. But beating Foley in Foley's type of match, even if he had been a few years removed, it does give him that sense of legitimacy, and it would help going forward in future matches with Cena.
So with this 2022, it actually does get into my top 10 at number 10. Booker T, Boogeyman, which is so bad they don't even put it on the highlights video at the end of the show. though Booker T's reactions it's what you pay his contract for, because the guy's got great like facials, you know. It's just fantastic. Mark Henry Undertaker wasn't amazing, but didn't offend me. It was just it didn't offend me as much as others. It was there. I was one of these people who obviously thought Cena was going to lose, and I wanted Cena to lose. But unfortunately, as the match started and the match carried on going through, like that slow realization of, oh fuck, he's going to win, isn't he? He's going to retain the title. It's just like, it was just something in the match that stated, like, we're not going to get what we want. Ray winning the title was obviously a failure. I wasn't rooting for Kurt Angle. I was actually rooting for Orton at that time. I can't remember why, but I just was. And sorry, the opener with Big Show, Kane, Carlito, Chris Masters didn't offend me either. But it's the other key matches. It's the four other matches on this show. The rest of it didn't offend me too much. It was just there. The Divas match, being my second favorite match on the card. The reason why, Carl. Besides the blatant foof grabbing, and then proceeding to lick the hand, it actually had like a storyline to it that built over months. This wasn't like just like some like Playboy match or just some lingerie or a Divas Battle Royal that
no,
they've
it was
done.
A lesbian obsession.
Yes, which basically is money. And the match actually itself I thought was a good match, and the crowd were really into it. They were absolutely behind Mickey on this one, behind the heels. And I thought Trish's performances at that time were really solid, and I thought Mickey James really shone in that match. The best match on the card was the Foley Edge. I was a huge Edge fan at this point. You know, I was gutted that he lost the title at Royal Rumble, as I'd gone over before. And it was just like the reaction of them going through the table, which for any guy, for Edge, going head first, essentially, into a flaming table, it's just, yeah, just absolutely crazy. It was just fantastic. And also, like, I never thought I was ever going to see anyone go through a flaming table at a WrestleMania. That's really, like, a standout. For me, the person who stood out most in that show was Edge. The long-lasting image, for me, of that match was just afterwards, where Edge gets up, and he's just coated in blood. There's blood in his fucking eyes, and he's just there, like his hand, his one arm is just like bent slightly. He's just
in
quivering.
The old Jeremy Beadle hand.
Yeah, yeah, and he's just.
If you live in America, Google it.
Unbelievable. Oh my god. Wow. So his arm is bent like Jeremy Beadle, and he's just like quivering. There's enough in there. There's enough little moments in this show that I just enjoy. So it just manages to creep into my top 10.
After being completely slayed by the Jeremy Beadle line, I've just got to say, is there anybody that disagrees with the placement of this just on the fringes of the top 10?
No.
No, I'm cool
with it, sir. So, with no objections to that, that does cover us for the middle 10. A lot of debate, a lot of different opinions. If we didn't get to your feedback this time, I apologise. However, next week we are coming to the top 10, which I imagine is going to spark even more debate. So we'll be posting that at steelchair.co.uk this Sunday, and I'll be looking for feedback too. Thank you very much for listening. Peter Gabriel is singing us out now. So for Carl Jones, Kieran O'Rourke, and G. John Chase, I'm Liam O'Rourke. We'll be back next week for the top 10. But for now, we're out of here. Pray to a